We left off last week on the bottom of Mem Vav Amud Aleph, the last line. The Gemara, we have, at this particular juncture, we know the following. We know that the Harim and the Gvaos themselves are not Nesarim Bahanah. So if a person bows, worships the mountain, worships the hill, so there's no Isser. But the same thing is true, as we've discussed. If you have a cow, and you deify the cow, and you bow to the cow, and you declare it to be your god, so it's Avodah Zarah, but the cow is not Asur Bahana. However, the cow does fall under the status of what's called Ne'evad. The cow has been worshipped, and therefore, even though you're allowed to shecht it and eat it, do what you want with it, you cannot bring it as a karban. It's considered Ma'os Lagavoa. It's repulsive. It's somehow, we would say, pasnish that you bring such an animal as a karban. So the Gemara now asks the following. Boy Rami Bar Chama, Hamishtacha Velahar, Avonav Mahu Lamizbeach. A person bows down to the mountain, and now you go and you excavate, perhaps with the Shamir, with that special, yes, Membatam Membavamet Aleph. Last line. So you bow to the mountain, and now you excavate the stones, you trim them with the famous Shamir, you know, the worm, the famous Agada in Gittin. In the beginning of the seventh parak, there's a child's series called Redwall. You guys probably remember it, right? Did you read Redwall? Ben, did you read Redwall?
No.
No. Redwall.
Animated cartoon.
And I think it's in Redwall. One of the evil characters, is Asmodeus. Who is Asmodeus? So it took me over for that. It's Ashmedai. Ashmedai was the king of the demons, the king of the Shadim. And so in order to be able to cut the stones for the Hoshan and the stones for the Mizbech, you can't use metal, so they needed this Shamir, the special worm. And Ashmedai was the one, Shlomo sent his servant, his general, Benoyel Ben Yehuda, to catch Ashmedai because he had to find out how to get the Shamir. Ashmedai knew how. It was a trick. It was wherever it was, there was a bird that was specially guarding it. So that leads to a whole story about Ben Oyahu. It's a wonderful agada. You know, Ben Oyahu, he imprisons Ashmedai. He figures out how to do it. He dumps wine in his water supply, and Ashmedai usually keeps it specially covered. So Ben Oyahu figured out. He drained and threw underneath the aquifer to get the wine in there and so on. He brings Ashmedai back in a chain with God's name engraved on it. It's really fascinating. And Ashmedai manages to trick Shlomo into taking the chain off, and he boots Shlomo out of the kingship. That's why Shlomo says, Ani Koheles Hayisi Melech Birushalayim. I was king, and Ashmedai masquerades him for a while. It's a really worthwhile agada. It's like if you go to the seventh parak of Gittin, I think it's the seventh parak. It's like the opening facing Amud Aleph is where that Gemara begins. It's absolutely fascinating. So anyway, you get the Shamir, and you cut these stones for the Mizbeach, but the question is, are you allowed to use them? Why? Because somebody worshipped the mountain. So the Gemara is really thinking about the same question. The analog is to Behema. The Gemara says on the top of the next Amud, Yeshneved b'machubar etzel gavoa, or Eineved b'machubar etzel gavoa. So the question is there in fact, just like by Behema, we say that if you worship a Behema, you're allowed to get Hanah from the Behema, but nonetheless, the Behema is Nefad, you can't use it on the Mizbeach. Maybe the same thing is true by Mechubar. Now, the Gemara has to go a step further here, because it almost should be the same, sort of same question. Imtim Saloma Yeshneved b'Mechubar, Eitzel Gavoa, Machshire Karban ki Karban Damu Olo. Even if you want to say that there's a din, that Mechubar is just like Behema, and that there's a din of neva, that even though the thing itself doesn't become asur banas and avodah zarah, nonetheless you can't bring it as a karban. What happens if you're not actually bringing it as a karban? You're only using it as machshire karban. So in this case, we're talking about something like the mizbeach. The mizbeach is not a karban. The mizbeach is something that enables you to bring a karban. If you don't have a mizbeach, you can't bring a karban. That's what we generally assume. So the Gemara, one requires a little bit of an explanation here. The Gemara asked the question about Avonav Mahulam Mizbeach. That is Machshire Karban. That's not a Karban itself. What is the V'imtim Saloma? What's the next step? So really, the simple way of understanding the Gemara is that the first question is about Mechubar in general. Is it Neser Lagavoa? Let's talk about not the stones for a moment. Let's say you had wheat that was growing on its own. No human being had ever planted the wheat. So let's, to keep it simple for everybody's opinion, there's no Tfisa Asiyata Adam in this wheat. And now you want to harvest the wheat. Same question could have been asked. Someone worships the mountain, and the question is, can you take, you know, and everything on it, he worships the wheat. Let's get, he worships the wheat, but the wheat was wild wheat that grew on its own. And the question is, can you, so you can benefit from the wheat, because mechubar is not necessary. The question is, can you take the wheat and bring it as a carbon, or does it have the status of nevad? But even if you want to say that the wheat has the status of nevad, maybe that's only by the carbon itself. Maybe that's not true by machshirei carbon, things that enable you to bring a carbon. Because it's one thing, I mean, it's kind of better and worse, but it's one thing that the mizbeach might have such a thing, but you don't bring the mizbeach to God. The mizbeach is just a tool. It's an instrument in order to bring karbanos. So that's what the Gemara says in Tim Salomar Yeshnevir b'mechubar. Even if you're willing to say that mechubar is just like behema, that it's not usur, but it is nevad, and you can't bring it as a karban. So machshirei karban kekarma damu ulav. That was the question. We've seen this a little bit because the Gemara now tries to make a kalvachomer. Amar Rava kalvachomer. Uma esnan shemuter betalush lahedyot. Now I'm going to skip the next line for a moment. Just want to follow the logic and then follow the source. There's a din of esnan zona, right? A man hires a prostitute. Strangely enough, the halacha is it has to be someone with whom there could be no kiddushin. It's not someone he could marry. They have no din of esnan zona. It would have to be, let's say, one of the arayos or something like that. And he pays her for her services. So the din is you're not allowed to bring that, let's say he gives her a sheep or a goat, you can't bring that as a karban. So the question is, what happens if instead of giving her a sheep or a goat, he gives her some stones, some precious stones, could you donate that to the choshen? So, let's say he gives her, I guess, the diamond mine. Okay, as her esnan. And now you excavate a diamond from there. I think a diamond is yahalom. So can you put the yahalom in the choshen? After all, he gave her the diamonds in the ground as an esnan zona. So the Gemara assumes that esnan, there's no prohibition of getting hana from it yourself. Right? Esnan is just about a karban. The Torah says, Lo savi, esnan zona u'mechir kelev, beis Hashem elokecha l'chol neder. You can't bring an esnan or a mechir kelev. We've talked about that a little bit. To the house of your God for any neder, both of them are considered an abomination of the Lord. So the Gemara assumes, without knowing how we know, that the din of esnan applies not only by talush, not only if he gives her a sheep, but even if he gives her, let's say, mechubar, something that's attached to the ground. So the Gemara says, Uma kavachomer, ma esnan shemuta betalush lehenyot, is asar b'mechubar l'gavoa. So, skip down two lines. Nevad she'asur b'talush lehedyot, eino din she'asur b'mechubar l'gavoa. So if an esnan, where no matter what the form of esnan is, even detached from the ground, a person is allowed to get hana from it. You just can't bring it as a karban. And nonetheless, even if it is mechubar, it still has the din of esnan, meaning it makes no difference. So a nevad, something that's worshipped, if it's talush, it's asur bahana, even to a hedyot, even to a regular person. So it's a kal v'chomer that if it's mechubar, obviously it's not asur to a regular person, but it's going to be asur lagavoa, right? It can't be, since it's more chomor by talush than esnan, it has to be at least as stringent, at least as chomor by mechubar as esnan is. So if esnan b'mechubar is asur lagavoa, then so too must nevad b'mechubar be asur lagavoa. Now, how did the Gemara know? This is the crucial point. It sounds like a great kal v'chomer, but it rests upon one assumption, which is, who says that esnan, when it's mechubar, is in fact asur lagavoa? So the part that I skipped in between is the Torah is as follows. Dichsiv, on the fifth line in the Gemara. Lo savi esnan zona u'mechir kelev, lo shna talush velo shna b'chubar. The Torah just doesn't make any distinction between the two of them. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, that famous joke, how do you know that Yaakov Avinu wore a yarmulke? It says, Yaakov Avinu left Beersheva, and he wasn't wearing a yarmulke. The Torah says, Lo savi esnan zona, and it doesn't say that this is only betalush, so it must be mechubar as well. Okay, so that's a rebuttable presumption, but that's what the Gemara says. How do you know that esnan is prohibited both betalush and b'mechubar? The answer is the Torah doesn't distinguish. So if esnan is asur b'mechubar lagavoa, then certainly nevad is asur b'mechubar lagavoa. That was the Gemara's kal v'chomer. Amar le Rav Huna, and you can skip a couple lines down. Amar le Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua le Rava. O chilof. Or maybe it should be the reverse. Now the assumption, what he's about to say, is that we don't actually know for sure. We don't know for sure that Esnan in fact is also from Mechubar. So he's going to suggest inverting the Kal V'chomer to learn the exact opposite. Uma nevad she'aser betalosh etzel hadyot mutar b'mechuber lagavoa. Now, let's make, who says you're right? Maybe, in fact, Estan is mutar b'mechuber. You know how I know? Because nevad b'mechuber is mutar. Now, that, remember, that was Rami Bar Chama's question. Nevad b'mechuber. So how do you know nevad b'mechuber is mutar? He says, shenemar Elohim alaharim v'loharim Elohim lo shna lahedyop lo shna lagavoa. Same type of a drasha. The Torah said that there's no Isra of Hodizara on the harim or the gvaos, right? Es Elohim alaharim v'loharim Elohim. And it doesn't say that there's a distinction between your getting benefit and bringing it as a carbon. So that's the case. Esnan shemutar betalosh lehedyot, einodin shemutar b'mechuber lagavawa. In other words, your kavachom, the flaw in the kavachomer really is, you don't know that esnan is asur b'mechuber. You have no idea that that's the case. I could just as well argue, based upon the blanket statement of the pasuk, that nevad b'mechuber is mutar. And I could turn around and make a kavachomer as to why esnan should be mutar when it is mechuber. Mutar lagavoa. Now the Gemara adds in one very interesting comment. Why is it that exactly did we think that maybe esnan, outside of this stam, the pasuk says stam, why would we have thought that esnan is asur lagavoa when it's mechuber? So the Gemara says, v'i mishum beis Hashem elokecha. Now, the pasuk says you shouldn't bring esnan zona u'mechir kelev beis Hashem elokecha. Now, this pshat just means you shouldn't bring it to the house of God. But apparently, the Gemara was assuming, if you look at Rashi, v'i mishum beis Hashem, Rashi is a few lines up from where we are in the Gemara, u'bo'is lememar d'bayis hava mechubar v'ka'asar. In other words, lo savi esnan zono mechir kelev, including beis. If someone gave her a house as her esnan, you can't bring that to God either. So Rashi says, midarshisle, you wanted to read it as hachi. Lo savi esnan shel bayis. Shim nasan la bayis be esnana, asur lakdi shel tzarech ben na bayis. It's a very funny reading of the pasuk, and interestingly enough, the Gemara never introduced it until now. Right? Until now, the basis of saying that esnan was asur b'mechubar was because the Torah just says, esnan is asur. It doesn't say talish versus mechubar. But now, they sort of add in a twist, that we're thinking about the words, beis Hashem elokecha. It could have said, lo savi esnan zona la Hashem elokecha. It says, beis Hashem elokecha. You would have thought you can't bring an esnan if it's a bayis, and a bayis is mechubar. So the Gemara says, if that's what you're worried about, that pasuk doesn't teach us that esnan, you can't bring some mechuba, but rather it teaches us the following. L'chedetanya, mi boile l'chedetanya. We need it for the following brisa. Beis Hashem elokecha, prat l'para she'ena ba l'bayis, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. This is a phenomenal statement. I assume this would be fodder for a wonderful sermon, but I'm not sure what the sermon would be. In other words, a paraduma is not brought into the Beis HaMikdash. A paraduma is done on Har HaZeisim. It's done on the mountain opposite. A paraduma is one of those handful of things that is almost like Shchutei Chutz. It's like a carbon brought outside. The Ramban a few weeks ago, Parashat Achrimos, has this fascinating theory about these carbonos. Every one of these carbonos, anytime something in a carbon is done outside of the Mikdash, namely, when you burn the par and sar of the Kohen Gadol, once you put the fats on the Mizbeach, you sprinkle the blood inside, you take the rest of the carbon, it's burned outside of the Mikdash, which is unusual. Anything done outside the Mikdash conveys Tumah to the people who engage in its performance. The Kohanim will burn it, the Kohanim will take it out, the Kohen who shechs the par, all the Kohanim involved in the paraduma, they all become Tameh, which seems very odd. The Ramban has this theory that the Sar Lazazel is the classic. It's on the Sar Lazazel. The Ramban says, the Sar Lazazel, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, is essentially divinely sanctioned devil appeasement. That's what it is. In other words, you're sort of appeasing the dark forces who would accuse on Yom Kippur, but because it can go over the line to Avodah Zarah, it's not Avodah Zarah, therefore it conveys Tumah with it. So Paradum was also Mitame, however the Ramban exactly sees that. So, paraduma is done outside. So apparently the laws of esnan don't apply to it. Here's the sermon, but I don't know what the sermon's going to be. The paraduma, because it's not brought in beis Hashem elokecha, if someone gave a zona, an esnan of a paraduma, that could be used for a paraduma, which is an astounding statement, you know, homiletically when you think about it, because the paraduma is the thing that is the ultimate purifying agent of all things. So I don't know if it looks to me what that sermon is, but there's a sermon buried in there. I'm not sure what it is. Okay. So you're letting me down. And I can see the Chukas is coming. It's, you know, only a month or two away. So, all right. So anyway, so Rabbi Lezer says that Beis Hashem Lokacha tells you that the restriction of Esnan only applies to those things that are actually brought in the Mikdash. Okay. And Divrei Rabbi Lezer v'Chachamim l'Rabos es Harikuim. This is a very interesting thing. There's only one time non-Kohanim were allowed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. In fact, there's probably only one time anybody besides the Kohen Gadol was allowed in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And it's not who you would think. The answer is the maintenance workers. What maintenance is required in the Kodesh HaKadoshim on a regular basis? Apparently, the inside walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim were plated with gold. So what they apparently used to do, I don't know if it's in the Mishnayos in Midos or where the Gemara has it, but what they used to do is they used to lower from the Aliyah on top of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they would lower workers in boxes, you know, where they couldn't actually see the Aron, they couldn't be Nen and Mizev Ashkin at all, and all they, basically the box was against the wall, and they worked on the gold plating. I don't know exactly what the nature of the gold plating was, and I don't know if there was, you know, fancy engraving, whatever it was, that's what they used to do in order to take care of the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the Gemara says here, L'rabos es harikuin. In other words, the metal that was, you know, to me, merakea metal means to hammer it flat, to create either thread out of it or to create plates out of it. So the plating of the inside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim could not be Esnan Zona. Notice Reb Lezer said, Prat, it was an exclusion. The Chachamim said, L'rabos es harikuin. In other words, the rikuim are, number one, not a carbon themselves. Number two, they're technically speaking, probably nothing is possible without them. A mizbeach, if you don't have a mizbeach, you can't bring the karbanos. If you don't have a menorah, you can't do hadlakas haneros. If you don't have a mizbeach hazav, you can't bring the ketaros. If you don't have a shulchan, you can't put the lacha upon in there. But the Aron Kodesh actually didn't do anything. And certainly not the plating of the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That, you know, the Aron Kodesh didn't do anything and wasn't truly necessary without going into any of the lumnus, because in the Second Temple, they didn't have the Aron HaKodesh. They had the Evan HaShasiyah. So the Chachamim say the Rikuim cannot be brought from Esnan Zona. So that's... Lenny?
The Esnan you get back is like it's a pledge to pay later?
I'm sorry?
The Esnan is...
No. It's not a security. The Esnan is her wages.
So then, how is it that you come to possess...
No, that? She says... She wants to do tshuva. You know, somebody robs a bank and they give money to yeshivas because they think that. So he or she took Esnan Zona. I think that's exactly actually one of the primary messages of the Torah here is that it's an ill-gotten gain and it's totally inappropriate to think that you can give this to the temple and this somehow expiates your sin. So at this juncture in the Gemara, we have two paths that we could go down. One path was to read the pasuk of Esnan as being Stam, both. Talush, detached, and mechubar, and say if Esnan applies even mechubar, certainly Nevad applies to mechubar. The alternative is to read the pasuk of Nevad, which is permitted, to say that is stam. That is all cases. That Nevad is it's mutar lahedyot and it's mutar lagavoa. In the same, and if that's the case, you can learn the Kal Vachomer as a leniency that Esnan is mutar lagavoa when it's mechubar. It's only when it's talush that's where the pasuk applies. So the question is, which path do you go down? So the Gemara says the following. Amar Lei, Rava responded to Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua, Ana kamina lechumra, v'at amris lekula? I'm suggesting that you make the Kal Vachomer, you set things up, lechumra, and you're suggesting do it lekula, kula v'chumra, lechumra parchinan. When you have a choice of making a Kal Vachomer in one direction or the other, the default option is to go lechumra. As Rashi points out, parchinan doesn't mean, normally parchinan means to ask a question, to borrow the traditional yeshiva language. When you want to upshlug a Kal Vachomer, when you want to refute a Kal Vachomer, you ask a pircha. That's not what the word parchinon here means. Rashi says it means daininon. In other words, you make a Kal Vachomer and you have a choice of two paths to go down, we go down the chumra path. Which is interesting. I think one point should be emphasized here. This is probably not midin safek. It's not that since we're not sure, we say sveika doraisa lechumra. Rather, it seems to be just one of the principles of the Midos Torah Nedrashas Bahem. You have in the first parak in Yevamos, the Gemara points out that there's a choice in understanding and making a hekesh between all the arayos and nida, or all the arayos and I think achos isha. And the question is, which should serve as the paradigm? Nida is actually very kal as one of the arayos go, because you can be married in nida. You can't marry a wife's sister. So the Gemara wants to know, which path do you go down? And the Gemara says, when it l'kula v'chumra, l'chumra makshinan. You opt for the path of the chumra. It's not because of a suffix. It seems to be just one of the principles. If this were a suffix, it would sort of change the entire, in general, it would change the entire calculus. In other words, when you do things misafek and you machmir, so Rav Shechter likes to say, every chumra leads to a kula, right? Because if I'm machmir, you know, to say, you know, let's say we're not sure whether they're validly married, right? The kiddusha might be possible. So if I'm machmir to say the kiddusha aren't valid, that's a kula also, because it means that, let's say that we say the chumra, they are married. So it's a kula because if some other guy comes along and gives a kiddushin right now, so if they're married, we're going to say that kiddushin is zero. But if you say it's only a suffix whether they're married, then she also might be married to the second guy, and she should need a get from both people, right? So there's almost no such thing as a chumrah that isn't a kula. So that's why it's crucial to realize when the Gemara says here that l'chumrah parchinon, and the Gemara Yevab is l'chumrah akshinon, it's not that in the end the din is a suffix. It's just a method of it's a method of exegesis of how you extrapolate, and l'chumra makshinan means that it is what we say mitoras vada, not mitoras safek. Once we learn it in that way, it's certain. It's not a question of a safek. So that's what he says. Kula v'chumra l'chumra parchinan. So now Rav Papa says to Rava, not so fast. Is that really true? Is it always true that when you have a choice of which direction to make a kal v'chomer or a hekesh, you always go l'chumra? So it challenges from the following statement. V'chalheikha de'ika kula v'chomer l'kula lo parchinan, v'ha'hazah de Pesach, de pligi Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbi Eliezer savar l'chumra v'kamechayiv le'legavra, v'Rabbi Akiva l'kula upatar. So let me give a little bit of background to this. The Gemara says there was a machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about something to do with Karban Pesach. And Rabbi Eliezer wanted to learn the Chumra, and Rabbi Akiva said, why don't we learn the Kula? He asked that Perachon effect the Kula. So what is this all about? Okay, so first thing, Shavuos is coming up. So on Shavuos, we know that you can cook. On Yom Tov, you can cook. You want to cook food, you want to shecht an animal, all sorts of things you can do. But let's say, that's called Ochal Nefesh. Let's say, you comes on Shavuos, and you want to cut your meat, but your knife isn't very sharp. So the question is, can you sharpen your knife? This is what is referred to as Machshirei Ochal Nefesh. Preparatory steps where you're not actually doing something on the food, but you're actually doing something on something to work on the food. So the Gemara has three deos on machshirei ochal nefesh. The Chachamim believe machshirei ochal nefesh are prohibited, period. Rabbi Yehuda believes that it depends. Machshirei ochal nefesh, which you were able to do from before Yom Tov, are not permitted. Midoraisa, they're prohibited on Yom Tov. But machshirei ochal nefesh that you couldn't have done on Yom Tov would be permitted. So let's say you had a knife and it was sharpened before Yom Tov and you cut a lot on Yom Tov and it gets dull. So Rabbi Yehuda would say in principle you're allowed to sharpen that knife because that was machshirei ochal nefesh she'i efshar lasos mibod yom. Those are the two shitas that are classically quoted. There is a third shita which belongs to a totally different camp and it applies in many places you wouldn't expect it. That is shitas Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says that machshirei ochal nefesh are just like ochal nefesh. You can do them on Yom Tov, even though they could have been done from before Yom Tov. Rabbi Eliezer applies this not only by ochal nefesh and Yom Tov. He applies it in a broad range of situations where Shabbos or Yom Tov is pushed aside for a particular reason. For example, you perform a bris milah on Shabbos. Classic case, they were going to do the milah. The only problem is that the baby and the knife were in two different places, and you can't get, and there's no Eruv, and in order to do the milah, you have to carry. Right? Or they needed hot water to do the milah. That was what they used to clean the baby. They needed hot water, but somebody forgot the hot water. Or the Gemara Eiron has the case, ishtapach chamimi, the hot water spilled out. Hahu yanuka dishtapach chamimi. What do you do in that case? Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion that machshirei mila are docha Shabbos as well. In fact, so much so, the Gemara in the beginning of Perek, Rabbi Eliezer de Mila, the 19th Perek of Shabbos, says, in Rabbi Eliezer's hometown, in this part you won't be happy about, in Rabbi Yosef HaGalili's hometown, they used to cook fowl and meat and milk and eat it. Rabbi Yosef HaGalili held there was no basa b'chol, even mid rabbanon on oath. And in Rabbi Eliezer's hometown, they used to cut down the wood and make charcoal They would cut down the tree, burn the wood to make charcoal, to prepare the knife for the milah, all on Shabbos. Because he held that machshirim milah b'doches Shabbos. That was Rabbi Eliezer's shita. And it's also true when it comes to Karban Pesach. When Karban Pesach is Docha Shabbos, that everybody agrees, that you bring it, we'll read in a few weeks in Baal Oscha, V'yasu asa Pesach b'mo'ado. B'mo'ado, in its time, afilu b'Shabbos. So what happens, so that's true about bringing the behemah. And you know, normally, you can walk the behemah up to the Azara. On Shabbos, it's not a problem. But let's say you need the Shechita knife. What do you do with the Shechita knife? There's a famous story about this. Hillel was incredibly poor. He made Aliyah from Bavel. He was so poor in the Beis Medrash, imagine this is the Beis Medrash, that this were a skylight, that he couldn't pay the entrance fee to the Beis Medrash. The guard wouldn't let him in. So he went on top of the skylight. And one time, they realized it was really cold, and they all of a sudden, it got very dark, and they didn't understand why it was so dark, and they realized he was like frozen up there. And they went down, and they warmed him up. And it turned out Hillel was a super genius. He had learned everything, and in fact, B'nai B'Seira forgot about the din of, I think, whether Pesach is Docha Shabbos. And they didn't know, B'nai B'Seira were there, like the heads of the Sanhedrin, and he didn't know. And Hillel told them, and then Hillel got a little bit too big for his britches, and he said, it's your fault because you didn't serve Shmaya and Aftalion properly, and you forgot the din. It's, by the way, very strange. How is it that they didn't know that Pesach was Docha Shabbos? How many years, how far had it gone since they didn't have an Erev Pesach that was Shabbos? But okay. But Hillel, because he acted that way, he forgot a din. They didn't bring the knives from before. What do you do? So Hillel said, I don't know, but Hanach Lahem Li Yisrael, Im Lav Kedoshim B'nei Kedoshim Haim, or he said, Lav Nevi'im B'nei Nevi'im Haim, and watch what they do. And they just knew. What did they do? They tied the knives up in their animals' hair, and the animals brought the knives to the Mikdash. Okay, I think that's how the Gemara goes. But you're not allowed to carry the knife. The behema, you can walk to the Mikdash, there's no malach on that. Carrying is a question. But a knife, you can't carry, right? Or what happens if there's something on the behema? There's a yabeles, a wart that needs to be cut off. So you can't do that on, we presume you can't do that on Shabbos, because machshir milah, machshir Pesach, anat docha Shabbos. Only the shchitas of Pesach, only the avodas of the Pesach, that must be done on Erev Pesach, meaning from shchita through, they could do the haktara as well, but you can't cook the Pesach until nightfall, until Lel Yom Tov. Only things that must be done on Erev Pesach are docha Shabbos. But Rabbi Eliezer believes that machshir and milah are docha Shabbos. Now, the question that the Mishnah deals with in the beginning of the sixth parak in Pesachim is a long, extended discussion. It's rare you find this in the Mishnayos, but it's an extended discussion of a Kal Vachomer and dialogue back and forth between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer is over the following issue. In order to bring a Karban Pesach, you have to be Tahor. Let's say you were Tamei Meis, so the solution to the problem is you go have be sprinkled from the Paraduma on the third day and the seventh day. Now, are you allowed to sprinkle from the Paraduma on Shabbos? The answer is Minat Torah, yes. There's no Isser Midaraisa. There's no Malach involved in sprinkling from the Paraduma. However, Midrabanan, they treated Hazaah, the sprinkling, as a Shvus, as an Isser Midrabanan. So let's say I messed up my calendar, and it turns out I need to do Hazaah on Shabbos in order to be tahor for the Pesach. It could be Shabbos or Pesach. It could have been Shabbos a few days before also. But the bottom line is, if I don't do the Hazaah, I will not be able to bring the Karban Pesach. So Rabbi Eliezer says Hazaah is Docha Shabbos, and Rabbi Akiva says nothing doing. Something that could have been done from before Shabbos is not Docha Shabbos. So Rabbi Akiva, and we paskin this way, holds that even in Issa D'Rabbanan, you're not Docha in order that the person should be able to Karban Pesach. But what happens to now, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer are having a dialogue back and forth. So Rabbi Eliezer wanted to say the following. Rabbi Eliezer wanted to say, the Gemara doesn't quote this part, Rashi fills it in, is that it's a Kal Vachomer that Hazaah is Docha Shabbos. If the Shechita of the Pesach, which involves an Issur D'oraisa, it's an Av Malacha Shechita, is Docha Shabbos, certainly Hazaah, which is only a Shvus, should be Docha Shabbos. That is what Rabbi Eliezer said. He made basically a Kal Vachomer, as the Gemara says, L'chumra, to be Mechayiv the Gavra, to obligate you to bring a Pesach. Because if you don't do Dazar, you can't bring a Pesach. So that's what the Gemara just said. Let's reread that line with that background. V'ho hazod the Pesach, the pligi Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Akiva. The Rabbi Eliezer, Savar l'chumra, that will make Kal v'chomer, which teaches us a chumra, that you can do hazah, and therefore you chayiv in the Pesach, v'kama chayiv le legavra. The Rabbi Akiva, lekula upata. Rabbi Akiva is going to make a reverse Kal v'chomer. The kaparach Rabbi Akiva lekula. Rabbi Akiva is asking a pircha. He's making a din lekula, which we'll see in the very next line. Ditznan, heishiv Rabbi Akiva. Oh, chiluf. Do you recognize those words? Those were the words that Rav Huna Brev Yeshua said to Rava. Rava, why are you being maksha l'chumra for Esnan? Oh, chiluf. Maksha l'kula. Learn from Mechubar to Esnan l'kula. So Rabbi Akiva used the very same words. Oh, chiluf. No, maybe you should reverse it. Uma haza'a shehimi shum shvus eina docha ha-shabbis. Rabbi Akiva is starting with the premise that you know that haza is not docha ha-shabbis. So if Hazah, which is only Nisid Rabbanon, is not Docha Shabbos, Shchita Shida Raisa Lo Kol Shekein, then certainly the Shchita shouldn't be Docha. Now, this is obviously, if you step back, and the Gemara knows this, and Rabbi Akiva knew this, it's a Kavachomer Shel Shtus. Why is it a Kavachomer Shel Shtus? Because the Torah says the Shchita is Docha Shabbos. The Torah says, you bring the Pesach, B'moado. So any Kavachomer that teaches you something against the Pasuk is by definition wrong. Right, it's just by definition. Right? So Rabbi Akiva knew that. But what the Gemara is going to say is, he had learned from Rabbi Eliezer that Hazah is not Docha Shabbos. The reason is obvious. The reason for Rabbi Akiva is obvious is because Hazah could have been done, didn't have to have been done on Shabbos. Whereas the Shechita is mano, has to be done on Shabbos. That's the way we paskin. It's a general rule. Things are only Docha Shabbos when Shabbos is mano. Any karban whose man is b'Shabbos is Docha Shabbos. Ask the question, how do you bring a karban tamid on Shabbos? That's a malacha. How do you bring the Musafim on Shabbos? The answer is because by the Musafim, the Torah says, bring Musafim on Shabbos. You can't ask a question, but it's a malacha. The Torah said to do it. And the Tamid we know because the Torah says also, Olas Shabbos b'Shabbato al Olas HaTamid v'Niska. So how is it you can bring a Tamid on Shabbos? Because the Torah says so. Obviously, the prohibition of Shabbos doesn't apply by the Tamidim and the Musafim. So the Isser Shabbos doesn't apply by the Pesach itself. But the Hazah could have been done before. But Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi...
What is the Isser of a Hazah?
Only to sit the Rabbanon, you know. It's a shvus. He calls it a shvus. I would say it's Masakin Gavra. You're fixing the guy. In the same way the Gemara in the second parak in Beitz assumes you can't go to the mikveh on Shabbos or Yom Tov because you're Masakin Gavra. In fact, the Chumra we have, it's talking to Machlokas, but we assume you can't do Tfilas Kelim on Shabbos or Yom Tov either. That's also considered Midrabbanon. It's Masakin Kli. So in the very same way, Hazah is like Tikkun Gavra. It's Tikkun Gavra. So Rabbi Akiva said to him, learn the other way, that Shechita is not Docha, as a Kal v'chomer from Hazah. So you see what Rabbi Akiva was making a Kal v'chomer, Lekula, to exempt the person from bringing the Karban Pesach. That's what the Gemara says. So you see that, and he used the exact same language, Ochilav. So you see that you can have a Pircha Lekula as well. Now the truth be told, the Gemara is going to answer the question very easily, but there's a little bit of sleight of hand here anyway. Remember I told you before that every Chomer is a Kula as well. It's often difficult to figure out what's the Kula, what's the Chomer. But in this case, I would argue, Rabbi Eliezer is the Machmir. He's saying you can't do, Rabbi Akiva is the Machmir. He's saying you can't do Hazah. I understand that the subsequent follow-up is that the guy doesn't bring a Pesach. But very often when we judge Chomer and Kula, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, we look at least initially at the context in which it's taught. To give you just a parallel, this is not a halachic issue, but it's a literary issue. The Mishnayos and Eduyos list a series of, collect all the cases where Beis Shammai was lenient and Beis Hillel was stringent. Now, if you look at some of those cases, or you look at some of the cases that didn't make it into the list, the machlokas is both a kula and a chumra. And the question is, well, why did some not make it in and some did make it in? And the Gemara asked this question a couple of places in Shas, and it says, I'll give you the example, this is a wonderful example. There's a machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, I think, about something on Yom HaKippurim, where one of them gives an absolute shir and one of them gives a shir, a malol logmav. I think it's the shir of drinking, if I'm not mistaken. So we paskin, probably Beis Hillel says malol logmav, and Beis Shammai maybe gives an absolute shir. Now, the absolute shir is sometimes bigger than a malol logmav, and sometimes it's smaller than a malol logmav. Now, the larger your shir, the more lenient you're being. So if Beis Hillel says the shir is malol logmav, if malol logmav is larger than than the shear, the fixed shear, then it doesn't belong in the Mishnayos in Adios because it's a regular kulav beis hillel. But if it's smaller, then it would belong there. And the Gemara answers, it says, ki itshel le'inyan og melech habashan itshel. The question was asked with respect to og melech habashan. Og melech habashan was a tall fellow. He was a little big. So his melogmav was very, very large. And therefore, it was a kulav beis hillel. So the context in which a question is raised often dictates whether it's a kula or a chumra. Obviously, if you apply it across the board, some cases it's a chumra, some cases a kula. Not everything, but many cases. So I would say the same thing here. I would have said that Rabbi Akiva is the chumra. The question is, can you do haza or not? Asur or mutter? Rabbi Lezer said mutter. Rabbi Akiva says asur. Ah, yes. The next step is, if you don't do the haza, you can't bring the Karm Pesach. I would have said, so what? Right now, you're not chayav. If you're tamei, you're not chayav to bring the Karban Pesach. If you don't do daza, you're never going to be chayav to bring the Karban Pesach. It's not really a kula. And the Gemara has a different answer. The Gemara now says the following. The Gemara says, no. Hasam Rabbi Eliezer gamrei v'yakar le Talmuda. Rabbi Eliezer himself had taught Rabbi Akiva, Hazaz not docha Shabbos, but he had forgotten it. His Talmud literally had been uprooted. Maybe he suffered illness or something like that, some stress, and he forgot. And Rabbi Akiva la'adkure. Rabbi Akiva was coming to remind him, but he didn't want to say, Rabbi, you forgot. He was trying to stimulate Rabbi Eliezer's memory out of respect rather than telling him, Rabbi, you forgot what you taught us. The Hainu da Amar Le, and that's what he said to him, Rabbi, al tachbireni b'shas adin. And what happened was, it was very harsh. Rabbi Eliezer was a sharp person. Now, a lot of stories, I got those with Rabbi Eliezer, who's quite harsh. And apparently, Rabbi Akiva taught this Kal Vachomer. He said to Rabbi Eliezer, as the Gemara just said, he said, if maybe make the Kal Vachomer, Hazah is not Docha Shabbos, then Kal Vachomer, the Shechita is not Docha Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer responded, he said, you uprooted the Pasuk of the Torah that said, B'moado, that you bring the Karban Pesach on Shabbos. He responded to his Rebbe, Havi li Moed le'elu, in other words, that Shechita has a Zman Kavua. It has a fixed time. Hazah doesn't. Yes, the Torah says, B'moado, those things that have to be done on Erev Pesach, those are the things that are Docha Shabbos. And Rabbi Eliezer got angry at him, and he said to him, B'shechita hei shavtani, you asked me a pircha on Shechita, B'shechita tehei misascha, your death should be by Shechita. Right? And finally, Rabbi Akiva responded, Al tachbireni b'shas hadin, which is a great pun. Because shas hadin here means in a time of a Kal Vachomer. Don't deny what you told me. Now we have to say, Rabbi, you said Hazah is not Docha Shabbos. But also b'shas hadin also sort of thinks about, you know, what does it mean for Rabbi Akiva shas hadin? So that's what the Gemara says, that Rabbi Akiva wasn't really making a Kal Vachomer l'kula. It wasn't a real Kal Vachomer. Rabbi Akiva understood. He was just trying to stimulate Rabbi Eliezer's memory. But he understood that if Hazah were Docha Shabbos, if the question of which way you go in the Kal Vachomer, of course you would say that if Shechita is Docha Shabbos, then Hazah is Docha Shabbos. But Rabbi Akiva's point is that you only say Dechiyah on things that cannot be done from before Yom Tov. Anything that can be done on Yom Tov, even if it's a Shavuos, or Shabbos, excuse me, may not be done. So that's what the Gemara says. There never was any Pircha Lukula, any Kal Vachomer in that case, Lukula. All right, so that's where right now the Gemara leaves it. The Gemara sounds like, at this point, at least this stage in the sugya, that Esnan is Asa b'mechubar l'gavoa, and so is Nevad Asa b'mechubar. Okay. Now, Rami Bar Chama, who, by the way, Rami Bar Chama asks a lot of questions. Boy Rami Bar Chama is all over Shas. He seems to be one of the frequent questioners. So, Boy Rami Bar Chama, the next question. Hamishtachave likamas chitim, mahein limenachos. If a person bows down to standing wheat, can you now bring it as a karva mincha? Now, the first assumption that has to be made here, however you get there, is that this material, this wheat that you bow to, is not asur b'hana, to a hedyot. Now, you remember the Gemara had said on Memvava Med Aleph that ha'akum ha'ovdim es hazroim v'es ha'yirakos hein asurin v'ovdim b'sayif. If they worship zroim and yirakos, both the vegetables, the plants are asur, and the person worshiping gets the death penalty. But the Gemara there said, that's only Shitas Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim hold that any time you plant something, the way Tosis explains, and it takes root, it cannot be Osir Lehedyot. So let's assume for the moment, the Gemara, when it asks the question here, is assuming, like the Chachamim, that Tala Shula B'Sof Chibro, that something that you planted is not Osir Lehedyot. Otherwise, if I can't get Hanah from it, of course I can't bring it as a Karban Milcha. And as Rashi points out, once you have an object that's Asar Banah, no matter what you do that object, if you change it, you transform it, you make a Shinui, it's still Asar Banah. That doesn't change. The question right now is on the assumption that this wheat you're allowed to get benefit from, because since it was Kamas Chitim, it wasn't detached Chitim, but it was attached to the ground, it's not Asar Banah when someone worships it. So the question is, but we know, now, and the assumption obviously is at this point, is that that Nevad is Asar Lagavoa. Right, because mechubar is that's nevad is asur lagavoa. Because if mechubar, which is nevad, is muta lagavoa, of course the chitim are muta for the menachas. Why would it be different than the rocks in the mountain to build in the mizbeach? So the assumption behind the question is that yesh nevad b'mechubar lagavoa. The question is, if you mishtachal l'kamas chitim, can you use it for the menachos? Now the Gemara is going to explain what the question is at the moment. Well, what's the question? Of course you can't. So the Gemara says no. Yesh shinoi b'nevad. Oh, ain't shinoi b'nevad? Is there shinoi when it comes to nevad or not? It means I take the wheat, but I don't bring wheat on the mizbeach. I take the wheat, I thresh it, I winnow it, I grind it up, I sift it. The flour looks totally different than the wheat. That's a shinoi. Right? If I steal your wheat and I'm caught, I have to return the wheat to you. But if I took the wheat and I ground it up, I have to pay you for the wheat. But why don't I have to return the flour? The answer is because I didn't steal the flour from you. The flour doesn't belong to you anymore. The wheat belonged to you. So shinoi, the question is, if I make a shinoi in the wheat and now it's flour, can I use that for a karban? Now, I would never have asked this question on my own, but it's an obvious question. If you know one piece of information, what's the din if you give a zona Chitim as her esnan, and she grinds it up, can it be used for Karban Mincha? So there is a drush, it's a machlokas beshamai beshilal. It comes up in the ninth parak in Bava Kamma. Beshilal says that shinui is kona, and beshamai says it's not. Beshilal darshins, kiso avas Hashem elokecha gam shenehem. And they exclude somehow from that, or Beishamai Darshan's Gam Shnehem L'Rabo Shinuyem. Even if you make a Shinui, Beis Hillel assumes that if you grind up you gave her Chitim for her Esnan and she grinds it up, you can bring it for the Menachos. Shinui transforms it into something else, and the label of Esnan no longer applies to it. So in effect, the Gemara is asking the question here, what's the din of Shinui by assuming that Nevad B'Mechubar is Asur Lagavoa? What if you make a shinui in it? Is that mutter now? Now the truth is, the answer should have been obvious. It should have been obvious, which is, of course, it's permissible. You know how? You know why? Well, if we assume that nevad is asur lagavoa b'mechubar, how do we know that? What's the source? We read it earlier. How would we know, on what basis would we determine that Nevad is Asar b'mechubar lagavoa? From? Esnan. So if Esnan is the entire basis for prohibiting Nevad b'mechubar lagavoa, a Kal v'chomer from Esnan, well, one of the basic principles of Kal v'chomer is Dayo. It means that mechubar can't be any more chomer than Esnan is. And if Esnan is mutter when you make a shinoi, then so should mechubar as well. Because the whole source in the first place that mechubar is also lagavoa b'nevad is from esnan, but shinui by esnan is mutter. Shinui by mechubar should also be mutter. And Tosos, now the Gemara, by the way, is going to conclude the opposite. We'll get to it in a second. Tosos claims it's only the Rabbanan. Tosos says it has to be that Minat Torah it's permitted because the source. If you take a look at Tosos, yesh shinui, the third Tosos on the bottom or from the top, either way, the middle Tosos, yesh shinui b'nevad. Tema says Tosos, mehecha yalif. Nevad b'mechubar le'isser esnan le'isser, it should be me'esnan. You learn the isser of mechubar lagavoa from esnan. If that's the case, then dayo labamin hadin leyos kanadon. When you make a kal v'chomer, that which you learn cannot be more severe in either direction than that which thing you learned it from. The be'esnam pshita di yeshinu ki the darshina b'mruba heim. Kito asa shal gam shnei hem velo shinu yehem. So Tosa says, "V'yesh lomar de midorais avadai pshitalei the yeshina ben avad kamo be'esnan elamid the rabbanon who the kami boilei." They wanted to know whether they made an agzera by avodah zara, but it's clear that midorais it has to work. So now the Gemara says the following. Now, how does the Gemara answer the question? The fifth end of the fifth line from the bottom. Toshma, kol ha'asurim legabe mizbeach v'ladosehem mutarim. Any animal that you're not allowed to bring on the mizbeach, Rashi says, for example, muksa and nevad. Okay, an animal that was set aside to be worshipped for avodah zara, or an animal that was actually was set aside to bring to avodah zara, or an animal that was actually worshipped. Now, muksa and nevad are disqualified as karbanos. But you can, but a head yod can get benefit from it. So kol hasur in the gabe mizbeach. Let's say the muktza or the nevad has a baby. Vladosein amutarim. V'tani ala Rabbi Eliezer oser. It's a machlokas whether or not you can bring the baby animal. It can grow up whatever age it's at. Whether you can bring it as a carbon. In other words, when the mother is muktza or nevad, does the vlad also muktza nevad? It's a machlokas, it would seem. So, therefore, what do you assume? The assumption of the Gemara right now is that a Vlad, right, the assumption is the following, that when I worshipped the behemoth, it was already pregnant. Or when I set aside the animal to be brought for it, it was already pregnant. Meaning, I also set aside the Vlad inside. And now the Vlad is born. There's an assumption here that that's a Shinui. That's a Shinui. It's Machlokas HaTanaim. So you see that the Chachamim believe Shinui is Mutar B'Mechuber Lagavoa, and Rabbi Eliezer would hold that Shinui is Aser B'Mechuber Lagavoa. So the Gemara says, wrong. That's not the machlokas at all. V'lav itmarala, amar Rav Nachman, amar Rabba Baravua, machlokas kishinirba'u lebesof ibru. The Gemara talks about a case of, and the other case of rovea nirba, an animal that was a part of a bestial act. So if someone was rovea the animal's pasul amizbeach. So what happens if the animal is pregnant? So this it's the exact same question. So the Gemara says, no, the machlokas is only when the behema first became a nirba'as, and then it became pregnant. In other words, you weren't rovea when it had the ubar inside. You were rovea before, and then it gets pregnant. And you know what the machlokas is about? It's a very important machlokas, halacha l'maisa. It's known as zevezeh gorem. When you have two elements that perform a similar action, I think we counted this before, to transform another object, if one of them is asr and one of them is mutter, do we say it's asr or do we say it's mutter? In other words, if neither one was sufficient, which one do we follow? Rabbi Eliezer believes zevezeh gorem is asr. The Chachamim believes zevezeh gorem is mutter. Let me give a simple example of where zevezeh gorem could come up. It's a big issue in the food industry, actually, with enzymes. But let me give sort of a regular kitchen type application. Supposing I have yeast. I have some yeast which is truma. And I have some sourdough which is truma, and I have sourdough which is chulin, and I'm not a kohen. And let's say I make bread using the sourdough in order to cause it to rise. Now, if in a case where there wasn't enough sourdough, either of the truma or the chulin, to make it rise, you needed both together, that's called zevezeh gorem, and that would be subject to the machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. So in this case, an ubar has two causes. He has a mother, and he has a father, or she. And therefore, if you have a behema which is a nirbas, which is asura lagavoa, and you have a father behema which is not, and the father behema contributes to making this vlad, is zevezeh gorem. That's a case of nirbu'u ulebesof ibru. The avera didn't take place on the animal when it was pregnant, it took place before. And now we have an animal, one animal is nirbas, one animal, the male, is not nirbas, roveh, whatever. And now they combine together to make a baby, and that's a zevezeh gorem. The Chachamim say zevezeh gorem is mutter. Rabbi Eliezer says zevezeh gorem is asur. That's where the Chachamim permit using it as a carbon, and Rabbi Eliezer prohibits. Aval, ibru ulebesof nirbu'u, divrei hakol asur. But if the behemoth was already pregnant, and then someone's rovea the behemoth, someone was oveid the behemoth, was maksa the behemoth, set it aside to be brought for avodah zara, so then everybody agrees it's asur. Why? Because the isur of rovea or muksa nevad sets in on the entire animal. The act was performed on the entire animal, and the entire animal now becomes asur. And here, v'hachanami, in our case, ki'ibru ulebesof nirba udami. Why? Because in our case, you have the chitim. You have the chitim. Which are actually become the nevad, and assuming that they're mos lagavoa, nobody would say that the shinui makes a difference. Okay. Ika da'amri, the Gemara asks, it means the same thing. It's a slightly different version. Ika da'amri, v'itmar ala amar av nacham and amar avu, amachlokes kashin nirbu lusof iru, al iru lusof nirbu, divrei akal asur, v'hani nami ki iru lusof nirbu dami. What's going on here is just an editorial shift question. The way the Gemara presented it originally, the Gemara had a question. Is there shina ben evad? Is there not? They quoted Mar Zutra Breid Rav Nachman, quotes a brisa, which he suggests implies there's a machlokus about this question. And then the Gemara responds against that and says on the bottom line, three lines on the bottom, V'lav itmar la'ah, but didn't we say, didn't Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avur explain the machlokus differently? And everybody would say it's also here. The second version of the Gemara says that that when Ramar Sutra Breit Rav Nachman tried to answer the question, he didn't try to answer the question by saying it's a machlokes. He presented the entire sugya. He said, we have a machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim about whether or not the Vlad is Asar. And we know that Rav Nachman Amar Avua said that this is the contest of the machlokes, and therefore obviously everybody holds it's Asar. In other words, in the first case, the person who quoted the Braisa thought he was answering the question to say that it's actually a machlokes, and the Gemara responded by pointing out that the machlokes has already been explained differently. In the second Lashon, the Mar Zutra, Bereid Rav Nachman, is quoting the entire sugya. He's quoting, as we would say, the entire raid, the entire presentation. He's saying, we have the Braisa, which looks like it's machlokes, but it's really not, because Itmar Aleh, the statement of Rav Nachman Amar Ravua, that the machlokes doesn't apply when the behema was nirbas after it became pregnant. Right, so there's no difference substantively between Lashonos, it's just how it was presented in the Beis Medrash. Which does tell you something, by the way. It tells you how far the editors of the Gemara went to preserve even details that fundamentally should really not be relevant to the actual substance of the issue. It's really just how the issue was presented in the Beis Medrash. Many years ago, when I had my doctoral exams, so one of the essays that I wrote on the written portion was about the question of attributions, the reliability of attributions in rabbinic literature. In the board of the Beis Medrash, we assume when the Gemara quotes Rav is saying something, Rav said something, period, end of discussion. But, mid-20th century scholarship, particularly Jacob Neusner, late Jacob Neusner, came forward and challenged the question of whether we can rely upon rabbinic attributions. I think the answer to the question, I think, is pretty clear, is that for the most part, yes. It doesn't mean they're infallible, but one of the arguments, not my proof, one of the observations that's been made is that when you look in the Gemara will often, when it quotes something, quote a long chain of Amorim, and then it will say, Ve'iket Amri, that the chain was slightly different, right? And sometimes it quotes three versions. They took great pains to try to preserve as accurately as they could the exact chain of transmission, even when it's totally irrelevant to the substance of the issue. It was something that they considered significant. So it doesn't mean that errors can't happen, but the assumption of sort of fictitious attribution really rests on very, very weak foundation. I think this is another different kind of example, but it's not, here the names are all the same, but even just the way it was presented in the Beis Medrash was something that they thought was very important, that it wasn't important not only to present the substance of the tradition, but also even sort of to present the way it was presented in the context of the Beis Medrash. It seems pretty, they took great pains in this regard. Okay. So at this stage the Gemara then has reached the conclusion that Ein shinoi b'mechubar b'nevad. In other words, shinoi doesn't help you. So the Gemara says on the fifth line, what are you talking about? Hachi hashta. What? Hasa meikar behema v'hashta behema. Dashahu de'achiza b'anpa. What are you talking about? There's no shinoi there. It was a behema before. It was a behema afterwards. You know what the problem was? The door was closed in front of it. The delas was achuz. Hacha, our case, meikara chite v'hashta kimcha. Now, here, it started out as wheat, and now it's flour. That's a real shinoi. Therefore, even if you're correct, even if Rav Nachman Amar Avuah is correct, that the machlokes does not apply by ibru ulebesof nirbu, and in that case, everybody agrees it's aser, that's because there's no shinoi. But by the chitim, there's a shinoi. The Gemara doesn't answer the question. Mm-hmm.
Why do we say the case of chitim is analogous to ibru ulebesof nirbu? I would have thought it would be the opposite. What about the case of chitim assumes that there is some fundamental... The derivatives had already started brewing. I guess that, to me, that's...
So I think the analogy is as follows. The whole point is that when the if you worship the ground that produced the chitim, That would be analogous to being Roveah the Behemah and then it becoming pregnant. But if you worship the Chitim themselves, and now all we're doing is changing the Chitim, that's analogous to worshiping the Behemah that has the Ubar inside, and now the Ubar gets changed, right? It's born. Right? If there was no Ubar yet, that's not analogous, because then, in other words, the object that you worshiped was Lo Bal Olam, it didn't exist yet. The object we're talking about. So choosing between Nirbu Lusof Ibru Ulubusof Nirbu, Chitim exists when you're worshipping it. In the same way, the Ubar exists when you're worshipping it. In other words, it's not a perfect analogy because the Chitim, you're worshipping the Chitim. You could have argued by Behemah, and some of the Rishonim talk about this a little bit, that you're not actually worshipping the Ubar. You're only worshipping the mother Behemah. You don't even know it's pregnant. You don't even care it's pregnant. But it's certainly much closer to Ibru Ulubusof Nirbu than it is to Nirbu Lusof Ibru, because Nirbu Lusof Ibru, the fetus doesn't even exist yet.
But so too with Chitim. Can you analogously argue that Nirbu, you worship the Chitim, they became Neva, they're usher to you, and at that point, that's when the Shinoi comes from Chitim into flower.
Right.
So too. So too with the case of the Behemoth. First, the Behemoth is Nirbu, then it first becomes usher, then it becomes, then it's Ibru, and then it becomes pregnant, then the Vlad is born.
I know, but the point is, the Shina we're talking about is in the Vlad, not in the Behemoth. The Shina is in the Vlad, and the Vlad doesn't exist. In the case of Nirbu, the self Ibru, the Vlad didn't exist when it was Nirba.
Right, so
the Chitim exists.
The flower didn't exist.
No, but the object existed.
Yes.
Right, we can talk about chitim, the chitim, and the flower looks different. But here, there's nothing, then an ubar. Despite the fact that you could have argued that even by a case of nirbu so ibru l'sof nirbu that you're not even worshiping the ubar, nonetheless, Rav Nachman said that Chacham Rabbi Lezer agree that the Vlad is Aser. Certainly in the case of Chitim, where your intent is to worship the Chitim. And if Shinui doesn't help you by the Vlad that you might not even been intending to worship, it certainly shouldn't help you by the Chitim, which was the focus of your worship. Okay, so that's where the Gemara ends at this point. We'll stop here. There's a few more questions the Gemara is going to ask that tie into some of the previous things. I wouldn't say very practical, but Sukkos is not coming up. Yep, there are questions about lulav, a lulav that was nevad and using it, and so on. We'll talk, or a sheira tree that was nevad using a branch for a lulav. I just want to mention one thing that's interesting to think about. I don't think this Gemara is this positive one way or the other, but it certainly raises the question: what is the relationship between the ubar when it leaves the mother, before it leaves the mother, and after it leaves the mother? There's generally a machalokus whether ubar zerach imo. It matters for one thing in the discussion of abortion. This particular Gemara really makes it almost sound like the Ubar is an Ubar, the Ubar is a Behema before and after birth. Right? This sounds like Ubar is not Yerach Imo, it's not a limb of the mother, it's rather a separate entity, because if the Gemara can say that there's no Shino here because it was a Behema before and it's a Behema now, and it was just that the door was locked in front of it, and when mother gives birth they opened the door, so it really sounds like it was a Behema even when it was inside the mother. I'm not suggesting that this is a Gemara is actually the way we hold, I'm just pointing out that this should be part of the discussion. What is the relationship between the fetus and the born animal in this case, and potentially by analog to human beings as well. Okay. All right.